American.
Well, welcome back. Roland Smith here with Carl Sabatino, and we have on the line Luis Tajarina. Luis Tajarina is a chief of his tribe. He comes from Odessa, Texas, where he is connected, reconnected with his ancestral Comanche roots. And he started working in the field of computer technology right after graduating from high school and opened up an IT service business a few years later before he decided to work as a communications manager for an oil well service. Anyway, Chief, thank you so much for being with us. I'd like to start before we get into some of the things that you have been teaching recently, which are called tips to getting back to the roots of health and well-being. It comes from your own personal experience. What is that experience briefly, and then let's get into some of the methods that helped get you there.
That's correct. Long ago, when I was about 29 years old, I was topsy-turvy in my life. I had been involved with drugs and alcohol, and I didn't really know my heritage, and it was something that really wasn't talked about in the family. But when I did find myself in a hole so deep that all I could do was look up and say, okay, God, what am I doing with my life? And I had to start looking where I came from, and then talking with relatives and grandma and that kind of thing. Found out that we were Comanche on my mother's side and Tarahumara on my father's side of the family. And so I started looking into that and seeing, well, what is it that they did? And at that point in time, I discovered that they did a ceremony that's called a vision quest. And in that vision quest, they would take a young man, approximately the age of 15 years old, and take him out into the wilderness for 4 days without food and water. And he was to take that time and to align his life with what the Creator had in given him to come into this world to do. And so at the age of 29, I said, well, maybe that's where I need to start. It's a rite of passage. And so I went and did that, and I had an opportunity to get my life straightened out and get a second chance.
Well, when you had, did you have a vision, I guess, is the question.
I did have a vision, and on the third day of sitting out there in the wilderness, you know, the body starts going towards the death. Really, if you're not having the food and water after 3 days, you're pretty much heading towards the death. And that's what brings the vision on. And I did have a vision, and my life was turned around, and I saw myself doing what's known as a Sundance in a Sundance ceremony that is done in South Dakota. And so I came back and talked with elders, and I found out that I had an inroad. I was able to get to the Sundance, and over a period of 15 years, I was there to learn and to grow, and I was asked to be sub-chief of the Sundance ceremony, and then I was installed as the chief in the Trans-Pecos region, and that's how I came to be the chief, was by learning and growing through the auspices of the Lakotas in South Dakota. But I did have a vision, and that vision can be read in detail on my books that I have on W. Wolf Enterprises, if you're interested to find out the rest of the story, because it's quite detailed as far as the vision is concerned. But yes, sir, it sure did come after the third day I was there, and it's one of those things that, you see, people say, well, maybe you were just having a dream. Well, yeah, I was having a dream, but I was awake.
Yeah, what's the name of the book?
The Healer Within, and it's a native perspective to the metaphysical healing.
All right, the Native Within.
Native perspective to the metaphysical healing.
I love it. Can you tell those who might not know what a Sundance is, what that is?
Yes, sir. The Sundance is a four-day ceremony that allows the participant to sacrifice his own flesh through piercing of the flesh and ripping loose of that flesh. Years ago, if you remember, A Man Called Horace, Richard Harris, did that movie.
I do remember
that,
yes.
And that is the Sundance ceremony that he was forced to do in that movie. That's pretty much as close as you can get to having the real thing, because I've seen it, and it is pretty much just what you see right there. So,
did you do that yourself?
Yes, I had done that for 15 years. I've got probably about 100 different scars on my chest and back and arms for having done the sacrifices that I've done over the years, and it's a a ceremony that's grueling. It takes you to a place where you know who you are and where you stand. It really brings out the inner power that you have within yourself.
I wonder if one's DNA has to be that of a Native American before one can truly appreciate that.
I've known some that are non-natives that have gone and participated and done the piercing, and they have appreciated it after learning what it's all about. Don't have to be non-native to participate in it. Most of the times they'll look into a person's heart and to see that they're there for the right reasons and be able to participate in that ceremony.
Chief Carl Sabatino, I'm wondering... I have a great passion, my wife and I both do, for Native Americans. We understand to our limited ability the experience of the Native American culture on this continent. Is this related back to that historical experience of Native Americans, regardless of the part of the country they came from, whether it be the Iroquois, Navajo, Nez Perce, doesn't matter. Is this part of that whole experience, which is unique unto yourselves as opposed to the European experience as we came to this country?
Yes, Carl, it is. The experience itself takes you out of the normal environment that you live. We go to the Rosebud Reservation and we stay for 2 weeks camping out in the open. There's no running water, no electricity. We do everything in the way of the old ways of doing things. And the ceremony is prepared in the old traditional ways. Things are done the way they have been done for hundreds of years. And so it does take you away from your normal routine, from your normal environment, and it takes you to a place that you would say, yeah, we're living back way back when it first started.
Chief, is there any correlation between what we all observe today, the piercings of our young people with their lips and ears and other parts of their body, to the same kind of thing you're talking about at the Sundance ceremony?
I would think that there is some kind of a misconception of what the piercing is all about. The need to have to pierce and to sacrifice the flesh for one particular reason or another. And maybe there's some misdirected or misguided notions going on there. But for me personally, because I have experienced it, my first impression was I'm not doing that, because it looks so barbaric and it looks so painful, and it does hurt, but it doesn't hurt in the sense that you're not going to accept what's coming your way, because you know that you're doing so good in overcoming those things in your life that are obstacles. This takes you and puts you in a different level, in a different plane of spirituality, and it allows you to move forward and to overcome those things in life that you need to overcome. So there may be some misconceptions about what the piercings are all about, and the young people take it to an extreme, but if they were to maybe go back in their own lineage and look and see if there was any Indian heritage there, they may be able to unravel it and to say, oh, I see, this is maybe the way I need to pierce instead of...
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, also, I would imagine there's a correlation between your promotion of exercise and the importance of it, as well as within the corresponding to the ceremonies that you have done, Vision Quest, Sundance, and perhaps the Red Road.
In understanding that these ceremonies are taking you to a different place and allowing you to change who you are, one of the main ceremonies that we use a lot is the sweat lodge ceremony, where you get in and you heat the lava rocks and you sweat profusely to detox the body and get rid of the poisons and the toxins and that kind of thing. And that's one of the first things that I was exposed to, was the sweat lodge in my life when I was topsy-turvy on drugs and alcohol. That served a great purpose of detoxing my body and getting all those drugs and alcohol out of it and allowing me to have a clearer vision of what it was that I was supposed to do in my life, and taking me through those steps into the ceremonies allowed me to be where I am today, standing on solid ground and being able to help others to understand their journey and their vision of their life, and help them interpret their dreams, because I feel that dreams are very important in understanding who you are and where you stand in life, and what you're supposed to be doing in this world.
How true, Chief. How true. I want to say thank you very much to Comanche Chief Luis Tejerina, and thank you very much for sharing some of the interesting things of a culture that we have forgotten and should renew ourselves to try to understand.
Absolutely. I believe that very, very intently and with all of my heart and soul, that if one takes the opportunity to look within oneself and find that truth and start living that truth, the problems that they experience in their life will unfold and everything will
you
go
got
out
it.
Before
Thank
them.
You. Thank you, Chief.
America, weekend.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff, here is your child having trouble concentrating. It's a common complaint. Hear it all the time. Unfortunately, many parents think that a child's improved concentration can be found in a pill. Here's the neuroscience of it. Everyone's concentration is best in the a.m., terrible after lunch, and improves late in the afternoon. And if you're anxious or hungry, you just can't concentrate on squat. Also, the brain is only wired to concentrate for 20-minute intervals. Then the brain demands a break or new material. What's the cheap psychological trick? Nobody, especially children, can concentrate continuously for 60-minute intervals. Instead, break learning down into 20-minute intervals, then break, and your child's concentration will improve. Got a parenting question? Email me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Order in the court.
This is Attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. When a drunken driver kills someone in an accident, they're usually charged with involuntary manslaughter. But can that charge be elevated to first-degree murder? If so, how? The Final Verdict after this.
Don't try to fight the IRS on your own. Use Coast One Financial Group and let them help you get a fresh start. Dial 877-219-8780. That's 877-219-8780.
Although rare, first-degree murder can be charged when a drunk driver involved in a fatal crash lacks a driver's license, has previous DUI convictions, shows a lack of remorse, or there's evidence of extreme wrongdoing. If there's indifference to human life, a prosecutor has the option of first-degree murder, and that's the final verdict.